It's 4 minutes past 10 o'clock here in Pacific Time Zone. You are tuned to the stations of Spokane Public Radio. And it is a very special morning and a very special time here because we are just about into the, we're into the first day of Symphony Week here at Spokane Public Radio. And what that means is that we have folks from Spokane Symphony Orchestra who are with us in the studio this morning. We are going to be talking about all things symphonic. And before I introduce them, I'm going to throw to the performance studio. And out there waiting for us is trumpeter Eric Moe from the symphony. He is going to be performing for us a bit just to kick things off. This is a little fanfare by a personality probably best known as the trumpeter. He was Johann Sebastian Bach's main trumpet man. His name, Gottfried Reich. And here is a little fanfare by Gottfried Reich. There we go. Couldn't have started it off in a better mode there. Music of Gottfried Reich, played in our studio by Eric Moe. And that brings me to introduce now our guests this morning in studio. With us is the new music director of the Spokane Symphony Orchestra, James Lowe. Good morning, James.
Good morning, Jim.
And along with him, the executive director of the symphony, Jeff Von Saul. Good morning, Jeff.
Morning.
And the director of artistic administration and orchestra personnel manager, Bethany Sheff-Cotter. Good morning, Bethany.
Good morning.
And we have the general manager of the Martin Wolfson Theater at the Fox, Ryan Ritter, a man seldom heard but and seldom seen, but you would notice his absence if that did indeed take place.
Good morning, Jim.
And joining us also in the studio is Eric Moe. And Eric, let me get your microphone going here.
Good morning.
And I think we've got everything rolling here. And James, let's start with you. That's an appropriate place to begin. You've been in and out of Spokane now for a bit and kind of beginning the settling in process. As a new music director of the symphony and new, at least part-time resident of the city, your first impressions, anything that's really, that you really have noticed?
Oh, well, I love it here. We played on Saturday for the opening of the Pavilion at Riverfront, which I think was the perfect kickoff to my time here. The one thing, the biggest thing I've noticed about town is how friendly people are. I've had so many people come up and say welcome and how much they appreciate the symphony. I think the recognition comes from the fact that my face is on down the side of a building right now. So I think that definitely helps. But it's been wonderful. People have just been coming up literally all week. I had it this morning. I was in a coffee shop and a lovely lady came up and said how much she appreciated that the symphony was here and the work we do. It's fantastic. So for me as a music director to be in a town where the people really care about the symphony is a huge thing.
And how your first performances with the symphony, what feeling do you carry away from those?
Well, the very first one in February. Mm-hmm. So it was fantastic. I mean, it was Brahms 4, which is one of my desert island pieces. And it was wonderful because, you know, it's such a responsive orchestra. And, you know, I always say when you walk down a street, you don't expect everybody you run into to like you, but it's just like a fit of personalities. And I think it's the same with orchestras. You just go, you be who you are, and you hope that it fits. And it felt like a fantastic fit for me. The way I like to work seems to be the way that these guys like to work. And I mean, I think at heart, we're doing something hugely positive, and it should be, at least in certain ways, enjoyable. Mm-hmm. So part of my work with an orchestra, I think, is about how can we bring the music alive? How can we actually enjoy what we're doing on stage? Obviously performing at the highest level, because I think that radiates off the stage. So I think that was the great takeaway for me, was this is an orchestra that actually really, really wants to play.
And was that validated by your first pre-season performance with the orchestra in Riverfront Park?
Yeah, it was. We had a blast. It was a huge mix of repertoire. And some of the kind of Parks concerts that the orchestra's already been playing, and a couple of other new pieces. So it was great. It's a very short, you know, for these events, it's quite a short turnaround. But it, yeah, we had a lot of fun, and as I say, you know, a lot of positivity radiating off the stage.
Excellent. And it begins in earnest this weekend with the first of the Masterworks concerts. And let me bring Jeff Fomsahl into it. This was a conscious decision that was made by the Symphony to rename what had been known as the Classics concerts to the Masterworks. What was some of the thinking behind that change? Or was it just time for freshening up of the titles?
Oh, a little bit of both, I guess. And it's great to be here with you, Jim. As we begin this very exciting season, you know, for us internally, and I hope for the community as well. And as James just said, you know, this Riverfront Park opening was a wonderful way to get the energy going. You know, to answer the question about the Masterworks, it's a convention. A lot of orchestras have call it Masterworks. Now, I think it does a good job of conveying the breadth and depth of what we offer and all the exciting things we have coming up. And I just want to go off a little bit of what James was saying about the excitement and a little bit of you're asking about, you know, what makes an orchestra special. To me, the common thread about enjoyment is with gratification. And sometimes we see that, you know, with a lot of our Parks concerts, it's bombastic works, John Williams, Star Wars, Jurassic Park, Back to the Future. But I noticed something really interesting in the Parks concert. We did Barber's Adagio, which is a little bit different, right? It starts slowly. And it's more about delayed gratification, a little bit. And almost immediately, people changed. And they were drawn in. And it's like maybe some of us had that professor in college who, when they said something really important, their voice went to a whisper. And you all started paying attention. I certainly had that. And it worked. And I think that is what's so amazing about the power of orchestral music, is that we have this sort of magic wand to be able to help mold emotion through the power of music. And that is my hope through the whole season of everything that we do, the movies and music, to the Elton John show that we just had, to Bruckner 9 and Mahler 2. So it's just amazing radar screen of everything you can imagine across the emotional spectrum.
And let's focus on that a little bit, beginning with Masterworks concerts. And the very first one, I think appropriately enough, is an all-American affair, and just starts off with, of course, John Adams in one of his iconic earlier pieces, the Fast Ride, Short Ride in a Fast Machine. And it is a short ride, and it is a fast machine, and just a wonderful piece. And then, of course, the centerpiece of two centerpieces, really, of the concert, the Copland Third Symphony. And then, as well, the Rhapsody in Blue with William Wolfram, who will be in our studios on Friday to play a bit and to talk about that. So things get off to a grand beginning here with that program. James, do you have specific thoughts about, like, the Copland?
Well, I mean, I think it's a wonderful work. I have to say, it's a piece that we don't perform that often in the UK. I've heard it done. I have never done it myself. So I've spent quite a lot of this summer getting to know it really well. I think what I love about it is that it encapsulates a very specific time in American history. You know, it's post two world wars and the Great Depression, and suddenly America is emerging as this optimistic world power, and it's emerging into this kind of, the future is something to be embraced, and this incredible kind of energy and openness, which I think reflects American values so much. So I think for me, this is a really exciting piece to start with, because it kind of does, for me, capture, you know, what I hope we will be doing in this thing, you know, which is that we're looking towards the future, and it's a really exciting time.
And let's broaden it out then to the program that's going to be offered this fall. For each of you, what are the highlights? Starting with Jeff, is there one of these programs, not just the Masterworks, but all the other programs that are offered at the Fox that you are really and truly looking forward to? I know, what's your favorite child?
Oh, man, this is really hard. There's many. Certainly, the first Masterworks is going to be just a very powerful, emotional. Oh, thanks. James is handing me the brochure here. The first Masterworks is amazing, and I mentioned already Bruckner 9, I love Appalachian Spring. I mean, I'm excited that we're doing a lot of American music. as well as the movies. I think that's going to be a really neat way to convey emotion, you know, across multiple sensory inputs, and that is certainly the way we are all wired. And it just cements the importance of music in our lives and everything that we do.
I'm going to bring Bethany into the conversation for a second here. And one of the things that you have done is to spearhead some of the more, how should we say, involved productions that the symphony has done with Harry Potter as an example. So what can we look forward to in that vein as the season opens?
Well, I think that I've done a little extra for this season. We're actually doing one for our Pops One, which is our James Bond program. We're going to open the doors 90 minutes early, and we've got sort of a casino style lobby happening and a whole bunch of different activities and a raffle. And we really want people to dress up in, you know, their nice tux and have martinis and have a great time. And we've worked on the programming for that as well with John Such Management, and they have Morgan James, who was from Postmodern Jukebox, coming to sing, as well as Hugh Panaro, who is famous for his Phantom of the Opera. And then we also have our Veterans Day Pops, which is Pops 2, and this is completely brand new. I've been working on creating it, and I'm working with Abby Crawford, who has a USO show here in town as well. And the show isn't just going to be patriotic works, you know, the usual Arthur Fiedler type of pops. This is about each war and not only popular war works, but the music that the soldiers listened to that kept them going through each war. And it's sort of a historical documentation going through time. And we'll have Abby Crawford, Jim Swoboda, and Derek Parker singing with us on those. And also, our big production is the Harry Potter Halloween that we usually do. And I actually started on that the day after the last one, literally, because we're trying to mix it up and make it new every year and take the feedback from the audience as well. So Ancient Tales of Magic, the music of Harry Potter and other Halloween favorites, is this year's production. And when I say production, it literally is a production. We've got dancers, a magician, actors, singer. Derek Parker is going to be singing Earl Conniff with us. The story behind Earl Conniff is actually very fitting for magic, and it's about the Elf King kidnapping a child, and we're trying to make it a little bit more family friendly, which
it's actually a pretty dark story.
It's a pretty dark story, yeah. So we're trying to work that in, but we've got a lot of great Halloween music along with Harry Potter favorites. And the lobby is a really big deal and a big part of it. We have a castle built. We've got actors walking around. We've got activities. The doors open 90 minutes before for that show as well. So it's a lot of fun. And we're actually going to be doing extensions for Masterworks 4 as well for the 50th anniversary of the moon landing,
right,
which is education-based. So they'll talk more about that on.
Yeah, that's something. There are a couple of really big things that are connected with the Masterwork series. One is the display that'll be part of the planets, and then of course the big Beethoven anniversary after the first of the year. I mean, these are real biggies, and many of them do involve our guest at the end of the row here, Brian Ritter, who as the general manager. First of all, bring us up to date, because some folks may have already had their minds on vacation when all that work was done at the Fox terms of the sound system. So bring us up
to
date on that.
So last January, we upgraded our PA system. We purchased a Meyer Leopard line array, which has made all of the difference in the world as far as the consistency of sound from seat to seat. We've had nothing but rave reviews for that. And then we also, in the spring, purchased a 20-foot by 40-foot movie screen that allowed us to do Raiders of the Lost Ark last year. And then going into this year, really utilize it fully. So that we've got a film series that we're going to do, and we'll be able to use it during the Masterworks 4 for the imagery for, you know, of space and all of this great footage from NASA. So that's the basics.
Very good. And so that'll be on, well, it'll be in heavy use throughout the season. What's the first program coming up that actually utilizes the full package?
I would say that would be the Nightmare Before Christmas. Is that the one in November? Or is it Masterworks 4? They're both really similar.
Mm-hmm. They're both very close to each other. We've got a few different things, different flavorings. Yeah, Nightmare Before Christmas, and then Pixar in Concert in January, Star Wars in March, and then on the Masterworks side, Masterworks 4 November 16th and 17th. And I think what's also really neat is, you know, our approach to technology. What we would like to do is have that being mirrored with the artistic quality that we see with the orchestra, right? We want to be top-notch in everything that we do. We want to give people an unparalleled, excellent experience in every way at the Fox. And so we ended up with a screen that can actually hold 4K resolution,
right?
Which is, I think, the only one in its in
it
the area.
It probably is, yeah. The screen fabric we chose was capable of doing 4K down, in case we decide to go that way down the line. So
that is equivalent to what one would see in a theater if you go to see.
Oh, absolutely,
a digital presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of that, we're actually adding another movie because we're so excited about our sound system and screen. We're adding in Back to the Future on February 21st. It's going on sale pretty soon here, so if people keep an eye out.
All right. That sounds like a most ambitious set of things. So we'll dive into a little bit more shortly. I'd like to bring Eric Moe into the conversation here. He's been the silent partner at the far, far end of the road here. Eric Moe, who is the third trumpeter of the symphony, and brought along not one, not two, but three different horns to play for us today.
Yeah, that's right.
And your microphone is still being a little bit on the... So why don't you use Brian's for a second here, and we'll be good. As I was saying, Eric brought along not one, not two, but three different horns. We heard the piccolo trumpet in doing that little fanfare from the era of Bach. Tell us about the horn and the piece you're going to play next.
I'm going to do a flugelhorn piece next. And the flugelhorn I like to imagine as being if a French horn and the trumpet had a baby, this is it. And it's my flugelhorn is actually, it's a copy of the Chuck Mangione flugelhorn, if you're a jazz fan, so that's kind of funny. But this piece is by Max Reger, and I don't think it's I don't think it was originally for trumpet. I think it was adapted after. It's kind of pretty vocal, and there's no rest in it, but it's really lyrical, and I love to play it.
All right. Well, we'll send you to the studio, and you can get set up. And while we're doing that, since we're talking about instruments here, let me just go down the row here and remind everybody of your instrument. James, when you get off the podium, what is your main instrument?
Well, nowadays I'm a viola owner, so or a non-practicing violist, although I'm not sure there are any other kind. Viola was my instrument of birth. It's a difficult birth, as you can imagine. Sadly, I don't get a great deal of time to play it anymore because, I don't really ever have had to travel with an instrument larger than a piccolo, but they're very, very difficult to get on board a plane anymore. So a few years ago, I kind of left it at home. So I still play when I can and love to play some chamber music. That's what I do to relax.
Excellent. And Jeff?
Well, trumpet, but the same as James. I don't really play it anymore. It got it all out of me at, the earlier part of my life.
And Bethany, of course, is a regular practitioner of her instruments. We sometimes see her on stage with the symphony. Your instruments, for those who don't know?
I play the oboe, English horn, and once in a while the bass oboe with the symphony. And we're going to be having that again for Masterworks 4 for the Planets.
That Gustav Holst, he just brought him out of the closet, every instrument he could find. Brian, have you... okay, all right.
Yeah, no, I played the saxophone in high school band,
Okay.
That's about as I got.
You're a singer. He's an excellent singer.
Well, that counts. That counts. All right, let's focus now on the brass family and specifically on the flugelhorn as we go to our performance studio. And welcome back, Eric Moe, playing music of Max Reger.
Thank you.
Romanze by the German romantic composer Max Reger, played in our Spokane Public Radio studios by Spokane Symphony trumpeter Eric Moe. Back in the studio, I'm Jim Tevenin. Along with me from the Spokane Symphony, as we celebrate Symphony Week, new music director James Lowe, executive director Jeff Fomsal, and among other things, orchestra personnel manager Bethany Sheff, and the general manager of the Fox Theater, Brian Ritter. And I primed you for this one, so you've had a couple of seconds at least to think about it. This is like one of those interview questions that comes up in the course of the interview. Where would you see, how do you see yourself in this outfit, or what do you see your situation as being in 5 years? So, James, as a music director, where would you like the orchestra to go over these next years?
Well, I see it very, very broadly. I think the way symphony orchestras have kind of evolved, we kind of got stuck a little bit in the 1950s in a way that the activities of an orchestra, the way it works. And I think heading into the future for the 21st century, we're going to have to rethink a little bit about how symphony orchestras are used. I don't think it's about throwing out masterwork series or pop series. I think these are the backbone of what we do, but the kind of extracurricular work, you know, what can we be doing with music that integrates us into society better? That's the kind of work that I will be concentrating on here. And I think, for me generally, I think symphony orchestras will have to adapt pretty quickly in order that, you know, we're still all around and happily functioning in 20 years' time. So that's my goal, is to let's try and figure out a way that symphony orchestras can bring this great music to people and stay relevant and be able to be doing that 20, 30, 40, 50 years in the future.
All right, well put. And for you, Jeff?
It's a lot of the same. And so probably because James and I have spent a lot of time talking about this. Now, I guess for me, it's sort of in two parts. One, in my specific work, to create the environment that is the most conducive to presenting our vision of the organization to the community. But it is also to be of the community, right? And so that is the part that James is talking about. I'm going to steal his phrase that we've been talking about, which is to be radically collaborative. I want to be the most community-minded orchestra in the United States. I think that would be a nice, that'd be a nice superlative to own, and to be of the community of our region, also representing our values within the organization of our artistic excellence. Experiential excellence, really, what we said before, you know, anytime somebody comes into our theater, to have trust in what we do, and to be consistently really taken somewhere, right? Taken on a sort of a journey, but based in the values of our community.
Follow-up question to that, and any of you can answer this one, and that is that it's obviously probably the goal that would be the right one for any orchestra, any musical ensemble. To any of you, what would be a sign 2 or 3 years down the road that that's beginning to work?
I would say that every Masterworks concert we have is pretty consistently sold out. That's where I would like to be.
All right. That sounds good. And anybody else respond to that? If not, Bethany. Your ideas, and I'll give you a chance to turn that. There we go.
Well, there's the perfect scenario, which is where everybody's rich and happy and everything's amazing. But then there's the realistic approach where it's going to take some experimentation, which we've already been doing. And sometimes things fail and sometimes things thrive. So we just have to sort of keep doing that. And then also just the connection with the community, like James was saying, is this is Spokane's symphony. It's the Spokane Symphony, but it's we are owned by the city. We are them. And we want to connect with them and feel like they are really connected with us. And we're not just this, you know, hoity-toity organization that you have to dress up and go see the concert and spend all this money. And we want them to feel like they're having a real experience and they want to come back every time when they go to the Fox and they watch the programs, not just for one type of program, but for all different kinds. Mm-hmm. So,
very good.
Speaking of that, I mean, you know, the Fox, from the Fox perspective, I mean, we really just want to become Spokane's home for the arts. I mean, that really is our ultimate goal. And that includes all of the performances of the Spokane Symphony, but then so many other arts groups. And that's kind of where our goal is that, and we've already seen in the past, well, see, we've been open for about 12 years, and we've seen a real interest from the community in using the space. But it's growing still. And I'm still sometimes surprised how many people have yet to be in the Fox and, you know, how many community members have, like, they'll walk in and it's their first time and they're just in awe of the space, you know, but it still happens. But down the line, really, we would like to be that home of the arts.
Mm-hmm. Nicely put. And Eric, any thoughts on what we've been talking about here? And otherwise, we'll also talk about your last piece here. Where would you, as one of the players in the orchestra, like the orchestra to be in 5 years?
I think, butts in the seats is what we're after. I mean, you know, sharing music with people and being a meaningful part of expressing music in the community. I love what we're doing this year with the tickets for high schoolers, and that's an experiment. That's a risk that we're taking. I've got a son that is 16 right now and dating, and I'm thinking, wow, that's a cheap date if he can, you know, plan it. And, you know, so I want to map out for him which ones I think, you know, here's the good brass ones you want to come to. And,
oh, especially the brass ones, yeah.
But, yeah, trying to market to him, you know, what a good date might be. But I love that we're doing that, and that's a big risk, and I'm anxious to see how that pans out this season.
Mm-hmm. I would think that certainly the program with the planets would be a primo one for anyone's first to talk about the shock and awe factor. First of all, I've never been to the theater before, and just experiencing that, and then the planets on top of that with the visuals. Okay, Eric, you're going to get the final word musically here this morning. Tell us what you're going to play to close it out.
The last piece here?
Yes.
I'm really excited about the two trumpet solos we have coming this year, which is unusual. It's usually, you know, violin or a string player, a pianist, you know, occasionally guitar player. So we have two trumpet solos coming, and Alan Vizzuti is a freak among trumpet players. He's pushed the limits of what's possible on the instrument, and he lives, you know, local-ish. He's in Seattle, so to have him play with us is going to be a big treat. And then Byron Stripling is not coming. So there you go. I'm wrong about that. But anyway, I'm going to close out with a Louis Armstrong solo. He was a big part of my early jazz education. I got a tape from my uncle in eighth grade, and I listened to that over and over and started playing along with it and learning to sound like Louis Armstrong. I actually visited his house in New York a couple summers ago. I love him, his music, and trying to sound like him doing a trumpet impersonation. So I'm going to close with Ain't Misbehavin', play the melody in one of his solos.
All right, that sounds excellent. Thank you very much. Eric Moe going out to our studios. And my Alan Vizzuti story goes back to my teaching days when I was accompanying young trumpet players who, of course, always do the most difficult thing they can, and not necessarily well. And they look as though they're going to explode when they play these pieces. In his master classes, Alan Vizzuti apparently had a trumpet that was suspended that he would walk up to and play with no hands on the instrument. Just to illustrate the fact that you don't have to jam it into your face and blow as hard as you possibly can. So there we go. Just reminiscences of time past here. So let's go to our performance studio. And in this case, a little Ain't Misbehavin', courtesy of Eric Moe.
Thank you.
And there you have it, Ain't Misbehavin' in the manner of Louis Armstrong, played in our Spokane Public Radio studios by Eric Moe. And James Lowe, one of our guests this morning, is again going to be very busy this week. He is going to be tomorrow, Tuesday, from 2 to 3 at the North Branch of the Spokane County Library. And that's the one up on Hawthorne Road, close to Whitworth University. And he'll be joined by concertmaster Mateusz Wolski. And there you guys will be doing an overview of the season.
Yeah, correct? We'll be giving them a little taster of what's coming up.
All right. And if you want to a deeper dig is what he's trying to say. That's what happens when you come back from vacation. You can't talk. But if you want a deeper dig into the music of the season, recommend this Thursday from 12 to 1:30 at First Avenue Coffee, right behind the Fox Theater. James will be joined by our trumpeter today, Eric Moe. And that's going to be a more in-depth analysis of some of the pieces we're playing.
Yeah, so the idea behind this is it comes from something I've done in Finland, where I was thinking, you know, book groups are such a big thing nowadays and people love to sit down and discuss ideas. So I was thinking, why can't we do that with symphony music? So the idea is it'll be a kind of deep dive into that program. So particularly Copland 3, we're going to be looking at, you know, what makes American music sound American? Why does French music sound French? And we're going to be talking a little bit about, from the player's perspective, what it's like to sit in an orchestra and blast through Copland 3. And so, yeah, it's this idea of a very informal discussion about why does Copland sound like Copland?
All right. Thank you so much, James Lowe, for being with us today. Thank you as well to the rest of our panel, I guess it's fair to say, Jeff Fomsal, Bethany Scheff, Brian Ritter, and, of course, Eric Moe, all from the Spokane Symphony. We are in the midst of Symphony Week, and that culminates, of course, with the first of the Masterworks programs, an all-American program at the Fox this coming Saturday evening and Sunday afternoon. So thank you one and all, and hope to see at least some of you later in the week coming back here.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
All right. And you are tuned to Spokane Public Radio. And